At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
I learned that Matt Milano loves house music. He loves the real upbeat, like nts, 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 nts.
Like nts, 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 nts. Like Jersey Shore.
I'm not surprised Matt Milano likes house music. He's Italian stallion. That is total Jersey Shore.
It would fit, too. The house music fits. There's a gift out there. Yeah, the gift. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Well done. Well done. Although, I mean, Sims, marrying into an Italian family does not make you an Italian.
I know.
If anything, it makes you less of an Italian because your own people don't want you around.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm not.
They won't claim you.
I'm not Italian. I know that. I'm on my own when it comes to my in-laws there. I'm the white guy at the family there. I don't get tan. I get red. I'm still like in awe and shock of my own kids, Mike. Right? I look at my damn kids, and of course, my wife being 100% Sicilian, I just go, I'm like, whoa, I can't get over how you don't have to put sunscreen on. Damn, look how tan my son is. I'm like proud at times of him and my daughter. I'm like, look how tan they are. They're related to me, and they look like that. That's amazing. So it's still like one of those things that shocks me from time to time.
Two things. First of all, we Italians still need to put on sunscreen. It's still advised by the Surgeon General to not just walk out into the sun unprotected because our olive skin is going to naturally insulate us against the potential for getting skin cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I don't want to get us canceled here inadvertently, and I say this as an Italian.
Right.
You made the comment that they regard you as a white guy. There is a weird dynamic when you're Italian because – there are plenty of white people who think that Italians aren't. It is a strange thing that happens from time to time, especially where I live,
right,
where there was some deep-seated racism against the Italians, frankly. Stop the music. This is a serious point. There are, in this county where I live, there are still to this day on the books deeds that prevent you from selling to Italians.
Wow, that's
to
crazy.
This day.
That's crazy. It really is. I hear you. That's unfortunate. I don't even know
they're
what
not
to say
current.
That. Yes.
They're not current deeds.
Right. And I know.
But they're in the restrictive covenants. When you go back, you know, you go to the records room and there's this old school way of looking through and tracing the title to a deed, something you have to do when you sell a house. You go back far enough, you'll find on the actual deed a restriction that the house can't be sold to an Italian.
Yeah, it's funny. And yeah, I know. You know, you go to the skin doctor up here, the number one thing they'll tell you is the people that lead with skin cancer up here in the Northeast are, to your point, the Italians because of a little bit of that mindset. And again, I'm watching my kids do it too. They don't put sunscreen on. I don't need it. You know, my skin can handle it. And that's the thing. So it's funny we got on this subject, but that's what happens when you talk Jersey Shore with Chris Sims. Okay.
Well, we got on the subject because they brought they us in it. With something right. from 2 weeks ago where we were having some fun about the Jersey Shore and Matt Milano and his penchant for house music.
Though. All right. Can you do house music? Seriously. Like, have you, you know what they're talking about? Like that techno just.
I don't. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Just that constant beat with no song.
I don't
with
get
no, with
that
no
one.
Lyrics.
I don't get that one.
Thumping. Yeah.
Yeah. That and country music are not make my radio very often, I can tell you that.
Two different genres, two different styles altogether. Country music has been around a lot longer than house music.
Yes, it
has. back to football. The New York Jets. Yesterday, I can see in real time which stories get the most traffic. Our most traffic story yesterday by far was something we wrote about Aaron Rodgers having some difficulties throwing the ball in practice. He had 7 straight incompletions at one point. His numbers were not good. Interceptions, just frustrated. This I didn't see yesterday when Rich Cimini posted it on Twitter. There's so much stuff, or whatever Twitter's called now, there's so much stuff that comes through, it's hard to keep up with it. Cimini said after releasing a ball that was intercepted, Aaron Rodgers clutches his left calf. He's limping around, but he stays in for the next play. This was his good calf. He injured the right one in OTAs. And remember, he injured that calf muscle in OTAs during that weird, funky warm-up they do with medicine balls and sleds. But that's all we ever saw of it. That's all we ever heard of it. So, you know, maybe it was a quick little thing. Maybe he fought through it. I don't know. But anytime you're talking about Aaron Rodgers, 39 years old, calf, and we talked at the time that he suffered the injury, your body's, even if you can still run around like you used to, your body is aging, and those soft tissues are going to potentially become strained more easily than they once did. It's something to keep an eye on. And I'll be curious to see what comes out today and tomorrow about Aaron Rodgers, just because of that one tweet, because it happened and that was it, and no further discussion, no further comment. Like, it's just with Rodgers, with another quarterback, maybe you wouldn't be concerned. With Rodgers, it's kind of like you hold your breath a little bit and wait and see what comes next.
Well, yeah, it's happened once already. He's of the age, like we talked about, where that's the old man injury in the NFL locker room. It's always was that guy that had that injury in my career. It was always the guy that was in the mid-30s, late-30s, and, oh, man, he took the wrong step, and now he pulled the calf muscle. So you always worry about that. It takes a long time for it to heal. And then, the other aspect, this has been a reoccurring thing through Rodgers' career. Calf strains, calf pulls. I mean, this was a thing 8 years ago and 9 years ago. He's consistently had to deal with this throughout his career. So I think that's where it's like a little bit of a double whammy there to say, ooh, watch out for it. As far as the getting frustrated at practice thing, I'm not shocked by that. That Jets defense, and defenses are ahead of the offenses right now anyways in training camp. But damn, that Jets defense it's for real. They're going to make, I don't give a damn what offense comes into town. They're going to, if you have to practice against them enough days in a row, they're going to have some days where they're going to make you look real average. And I'm not shocked to hear 7 straight completions or 7 for 20 during a period like that. I actually like to hear it. You know, it means they're not scripting for success and going, oh, hey, defense, play this play so Rodgers can look good and we can get fake confidence in the offense and all that. So, you know, they're battling out there. And that's, I think, a good thing for that football team.
It's all about getting guys ready. I remember back in 2016 when the big story during NFL training camp was Marcus Mariota has gone through X practices now without throwing an interception. And the informed reaction to that is, well, why is that happening? Like, who cares? This is the time to throw interceptions. And Rodgers was one of the ones who said at the time, I get to see what the limits are of how I can trust my receivers, where I can put the ball. I'd rather throw interceptions now than later. I'm paraphrasing, but that was one of the pushes back to this idea that Mariota, yeah, I don't know. What is the plural of pushback? I don't know. Obviously, but when Marcus Mariota's not throwing interceptions and Shefty's tweeting about it breathlessly every day, I mean, people are like, what the hell? Who cares?
Right.
Like, it's stupid.
Right.
It's a stupid stat. It's better to do what needs to be done to make the team better.
Agreed. and, you know, being aggressive in practice and, you know, like we've talked about with other quarterbacks, you know, knowing how far you can push the envelope and what you can get away with, that is part of practice. You know me. Yeah, you're ultra conservative in practice, right? Well, the game ain't going to be worth a damn then either. It won't be. You didn't practice throwing some of these throws that are going to be, you know, into tight windows with people around you that are going to be needed to be done to win an NFL football game. So that's where, you know, that gets really good. And I can speak to experience, too, as far as practice being hard, right? You know, Gruden was a little bit of a scripter of practice. And we, at times, I think, came off the practice field thinking we were better on offense than we really were. We're going, you know, oh, damn, we were 24 or 25, blah, blah, blah. You know, but then you realize, like, you know, later that day that the defense is like, wait, we would never play that, you know, against you if you guys were in that formation and do that. And then I was on other teams like the Tennessee Titans or even working with the New England Patriots, Mike, where you'd have days and you'd go, damn, Tom Brady's the man right now, and he's barely 50% in practice, right? Made it tough as hell, but then the game would start, and he'd be 28 of 32 for, you know, 345 yards, and you'd go, damn, good thing they made practice tough on him because the game seems easier than practice.
One thing that has made it a little more difficult for the New York Jets this year, although they're doing all they can to make it clear that it hasn't made things more difficult, Hard Knocks. Aaron Rodgers was on WFAN with Boomer and Geo. Here is Rodgers talking about the experience that the Jets have had with something that it was clear they didn't really want to do with HBO and NFL films.
Listen, I think there is an idea for a lot of us, myself included. I honestly hadn't seen the show in a few years, that it's just one big distraction after another. And I think the fear for a team that has such high expectations is, and with Hard Knocks coming in, is we want our team to be as authentic as possible. And I think there was maybe an idea that, you know, certain people turn it on for the show over the years at certain times. And I want our guys to be, you know, authentically themselves. When we're a connected group and everybody's pulling the same direction, that's when you can get something done. But I will say this has not been that at all. It's been very authentic with our guys and not a distraction at all. Now, I don't know, you know, how much we're limiting access on certain things that may be more distractive, but I think it's been great. Shannon's been incredible to talk to, and they've been, you know, not a hassle at all, and they've asked for me to be mic'd up a few times, and I've gladly done it, and I think the content's been good, it's been real, and I'm having a good experience with it.
Okay, that's fine, but again, I've said this time and time again, it's not a documentary, it's an infomercial. When the subject of the documentary has final say over what makes it to air, it is no longer a documentary. It is not documenting what actually happened. And for Rodgers to say we want to be as authentic as possible, there was an idea certain people turn it on over the years, hasn't been, you know, very authentic. For us, it's been very authentic. I noticed in the first episode when they deal with the Nathaniel Hackett, Sean Payton thing, and all they give us is what guys said publicly, and none of the stuff that went on behind the scenes. And we both know some stuff went on behind the scenes after Sean Payton dropped that turd in the punch bowl.
Yeah.
We both heard some stuff that went on behind the scenes.
Right.
Wouldn't that have been something to see and hear? So it's not authentic. If it's not authentically giving us that which authentically happens, it's not authentic, Aaron. They hid from us the true reaction, the true response, the various things that were being contemplated by the powers that be for responding to what Sean Payton said about Nathaniel Hackett. There's a lot there that could have been in Hard Knocks and wasn't.
No, I know. Well, you're never going to get that. You know, you're not. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's limitations to what
you're
going to
say. But let's not act like it's authentic,
well,
then.
Well, it's as let's authentic as it's going to get without a team causing more problems for itself and more distractions for itself and more issues for itself. Okay, you know, it's as authentic as I've seen Hard Knocks. I'll say that, right?
That's a low bar.
And okay, well, that's fine. It's still access that is very rare to see in an NFL organization. And that's what I appreciate about it. And then Rodgers has embraced it. And here's one thing, too. You know, because we all, the distraction thing is very real. And you hear that more times than not, right? But I did have a coach tell me on the Jets on the field in the pregame against the Cleveland Browns that, yeah, Hard Knocks, they're around and you notice them. But he brought up the angle of he wasn't so sure it wasn't a good thing, right? That it made everybody be on their P's and Q's. And then the fact that some of these young guys, they're in the team meeting room, right? And they know HBO's got cameras all around. They don't want to be the one that's at, you know, slouching or maybe their eyes are dozing off that, you know, mom or grandma can see and go, hey, what the hell are you doing? Why are you sleeping in the meeting, right? So that's one of the positives of it. And I think that's where the Jets have embraced it, to make it a little bit like, oh, yeah, you want to see us? Well, here, we're going to be on our game and do that. You know, and I think maybe that's what Rodgers is speaking to a little bit with Boomer and Geo.
It was the argument the Jets used to justify it back in 2010, and I think they dusted that off to try to get guys like Robert Saleh to buy in this year.
Yeah.
The idea that, hey, if we're going to go to where we want to go, we're going to be the center of attention. We're going to be the team that everyone's paying attention to. So let's get used to it now.
Yeah.
Because if we get to where we want to be, we're going to have to get used to it later, and we'll be ahead of the game if that's the case. One of the things we've heard over and over and over again is how happy Aaron Rodgers is with the Jets. I really do think that it's kind of a backhanded middle finger to the Packers. Hey, look at how happy I am. Look at how great I'm doing. Look at how wonderful everything is for me now. Eat your heart out. Cheeseheads, not the fans, the people in charge of the organization. Here's Rodgers yet again on how much he's enjoying his new team in New York.
When I say great things about how I'm loving this year, I feel like I need to say before that it's not a shot against Green Bay. I have a lot of love and gratitude for that time, but that chapter is over, and this has been, you know, better than I was even daydreaming about, sitting in that hole in the ground, thinking about what my life could be. Because I contemplated retirement, I contemplated coming back, and the Jets was always the team that was the most interesting to me because of Robert, because of Nathaniel, because of the way they whooped our ass last year. And just, I thought that, you know, it was going to be a good ball club, but it's really been better than I could have expected. And it feels like sometimes that I woke up inside of a dream and that this is my life playing out. I, you know, pinch myself various times throughout the week, every single week that I've been here. Like, man, how cool is my life right now? How special is this?
You know, Chris, I will not delude myself into thinking that Aaron Rodgers ever wastes his time watching this crap. But boy, every once in a while he says or does something that makes me think he watches this crap.
I know. That's damn right. When he said he wanted to make that very clear, I felt like that was, he was talking to you. He was like, hey, you little
ass. I'm surprised you didn't have an itch right there.
Yeah. Hey
Aaron, you want a sticker? I can get you a sticker for your phone. You want a sticker for your phone? You can give us a little subtle message that way.
Well, it shows you he hears the noise a little and that people do bring up that point. And yeah, you probably
I haven't heard many people bringing up that point, though, other than that.
Yeah, you're right about that. So, and hey, as people won't admit it, you know, coaches and executives in that will admit it to a degree. But the NFL is on your website constantly throughout the day. I know that from a lot of people. And, you know, whether they want to give you credit for some of this stuff or not, that's up to them. I mean, some of them think you're a jerk, so they don't want to. But, well, you know, either way, they're reading your stuff.
I almost talked about this right out of the gates today because I had an experience this morning, because it is astounding to me the reaction I get from some people within minutes, sometimes within seconds after I press publish or after I press send on the tweet or the X or the post or whatever the hell it is. It's amazing to me. And it happens all the time. And if we could ever saturate the rest of the world the way we've saturated the NFL world, our traffic would be 20 times higher than it is. This sounds, I don't know how to make this sound anything other than immodest, but it's the reality I live in. They hang on everything that we say, that everything that we post, and they react quickly. It's like, aren't you working? Like, how did I just put that up 2 minutes ago. How did you have time to even read it? And it's usually a complaint. Very rarely.
Thank you.
It happens. It happens. Every once in a while, I'll get a thank you for saying what you said. Or I agree with what you said. Please keep pushing that angle. That does happen.
Yep.
But usually, usually it's somebody who's pissed off. And Chris, I've gotten to the point where if it's somebody that I never talk to who just wants to reserve the right to complain about something, I'll tell them, look, this isn't how this relationship's going to work. This isn't you only contact me when you're mad about something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, call me up and say, how you doing?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't want to hear from you if the only time I ever hear from you is when you're pissed at me about something.
No, I've had to gently say that in not so gentle terms either. I've definitely sent some texts and even said to some people's face, like, I didn't hear from you the 100 times I kissed your butt and told everybody how awesome you were when they were on. But then I said one negative thing and you text me and call me. And that's where I'm with you. That's probably one of the most frustrating things I get at times I heard you say something negative. I'm going to reach out, but you kiss my ass and make me better at my job. I don't ever reach out and say thank you. And that is annoying.
We need to get back to why we're here today. This shouldn't be navel gazing, but I just want folks to understand how this works. And I've got, like, at any given moment, situations where there's someone with a team that thinks that I'm mad at them and I've got some agenda. So they enlist someone else to try to smooth it over. And it's like, are we 13 years old here? If you think I got an issue with you, I'm easy to find. And we can talk it through. And you're only going to make it worse. You're going to make an issue that wasn't even an issue by playing these games where you get some third party to try to smooth things over. I mean, let's act like adults here. Pick up the phone and call me if you think there's an issue. Text me. Let's have a conversation. Because, look, things move too fast for me to have agendas or axes to grind. I mean, I've got issues that I will go on a crusade about from time to time, and I own that.
Yeah, you do.
But I mean, I'm not trying to tear people down. I'm not trying to get people fired. I'm trying to tell the truth to the audience. And if that truth sometimes makes people think, oh, he's trying to get me fired, well, then let's have a conversation about it. All right. Okay. One of our issues, speaking of crusades, the running back market. Aaron Rodgers maybe agrees with us on the question of whether or not the running backs are getting screwed. Here he is from yesterday on the devaluation of the tailback position.
Yeah, they're three down guys, and a running back has to be, you know, they're in the blocking scheme, they're in the run game, they're in the pass game. They got to know, you know, check down rules and four calls and adjustments, and also go out and, you know, put your head down and get rocked, you know, 20 times a game. Yeah. So I think that's something that I don't know how you remedy that. Seems there's some backs maybe feeling like there's a little collusion this year, which
I would feel that way if I were them.
I would too.
It's more than just this year, though. Every time I hear somebody say it, it's like, have you not been paying attention? Aaron, it's been around ever since you were drafted. It's been around since before you were drafted. Mm-hmm. You get multiple guys, supply outweighs demand. You don't have one guy that gets paid a ton of money, and then you regret it within a year or two because he's starting to wear down. Those are all the dynamics that go into it. And collusion, I don't know if it's collusion or it's just kind of the way it's all happened.
I think so,
I don't know
too.
If there's That's been any type of meeting or discussion.
I agree.
It's just everyone realizes, everyone's got an analytics department realizes your money is better spent elsewhere where there is surplus value. Quarterback, cornerback, pass rusher, tackle, left tackle specifically. That's where the surplus value is, and that's where those guys who are the best of the best get more money significantly than the average player, and that's why the best of the best running backs struggle to get the kind of money that we think they should get.
Yeah, it's Mike. We like this is not this one's not collusion in my opinion. There's plenty of things that we certainly would sit there and go, this is collusion, and we're always supporting the players. This one is I look at it as just going, no, I think teams have realized this is good business for them. And that's unfair to the running backs, yes, but we explained this a while ago. I mean, the team that's been to the Super Bowl three out of the last 4 years has had three different running backs. The Rams have been to the Super Bowl twice in the last, 6 years. They had different running backs. The Patriots were in the Super Bowl every year of the whole century, and they had different running backs.
okay? And then it goes back to what you said. It's Mike Shanahan and all that, and his ability to show people, hey, if you have a good blocking scheme, you can get a lot of good runners here to still capitalize and get 1,000 yards rushing. And then you throw on top of that guys like, oh, wait, Arian Foster led the NFL in rushing. He wasn't drafted. Alfred Morris was top three in rushing 2 out of 3 years, and he was a 6th-round pick. Oh, hey, Austin Eckler, not drafted, a main focal point of an offense. So I don't think that's collusion. I think that's just teams going, wait, we can trim some fat right here at this position and put some money into some other positions of need.
And one of the reasons the Jets were able to go out and have a luxury purchase recently of a running back who is getting more than what the market would otherwise dictate, Dalvin Cook at $7 million base pay, $1.6 million in incentives, it's because Aaron Rodgers decided to give up $35 million over the next couple of years. Here's Robert Saleh, head coach of the Jets, from what Dalvin Cook, their latest addition in the backfield, adds to the team.
There's a lot, man. When you kind of, as a coach, as a defensive coach, I'll just sit there and just say, God, you got Brees and Michael and him, and you got two of those guys in the backfield, and it's, you know, you just got, there's a lot of different things that you can do to create a bunch of headaches for defensive coaches, and then, you know, he's not a trick back either. You can turn around and hand him the ball, and he can run downhill, and he's done it for a long time, and so it's just, I look at it like our D-line. Can never have enough, you know, and just let him rotate and be fresh and get downhill and wear people out.
Which is one of the reasons why teams rarely pay one running back a ton of money. They have this luxury, thanks to the Aaron Rodgers contract, where they can pay Dalvin Cook more than they probably should to join a depth chart led by Breece Hall when he's healthy, and Michael Carter and Bam Knight. I feel like one of those guys is going to get traded. I don't know that you keep all four of them. I mean, that, and the guys at the bottom are going to be playing a lot of special teams if you keep all four of them, but they're also at the low end, at the very low end of the salary spectrum, so maybe they can keep them all around. They're just going to have guys that are either not dressing on game day or not playing very much tailback, but this is another indication this team is all in. And the one weakness they have is this question of whether or not Breece Hall is going to be ready to go right out of the gates after tearing his ACL last October. It's different for every guy. You need your running game to be potent. You can't have the defense teeing off on Aaron Rodgers. You need to keep the defense honest with somebody who can. And he was averaging like 5.8 yards per carry last year through 7 games before he suffered the injury. That is a way to keep, if you have a Dalvin Cook or a Breece Hall, a healthy Breece Hall, that's a way to keep a defense on its heels to allow the passing game to operate, and it feels like that's why they did what they did.
Yeah, and it gives them wiggle room again, or not, you know, patience on the Breece Hall front. Hey, we don't need him right this second. You know, it helps the offensive line, of course, when you got a better running back like a Dalvin Cook back there. But to the other point of even in the pass game, the quick short passing game, that's going to help out the offensive line and everything there. And then I think when you couple that with Rodgers and, you know, Garrett Wilson and some of these guys they got that should be able to push the ball down the field if Rodgers is aggressive, man, it's going to make life hard on defenses trying to pick their poison and what to stop here. But, this is an all-in move, something Rodgers hasn't never really had the benefit of dealing with up in Green Bay for all the reasons we've always talked about. No owner, anything like that. And I think the Jets will continue to look to be aggressive. And if they have to make a move at the trade deadline, they'll do that too. But, damn, the Jets, you look at that damn roster, like I said yesterday, it's hard not to look at it and go, ooh, it's impressive, and it's going to be hard for me to leave them off the 1-7 seed when it comes time to pick these playoff teams.
I think we need to keep an eye on the Jets, not just at the trade deadline, but also as the regular season approaches when we see the inevitable cuts of veteran players. That was another dynamic that Aaron Rodgers pointed to in justifying the $35 million haircut he took, which creates an expectation by him that money is going to be spent on others aimed at making the team better. That's nothing against Green Bay. That's not a shot at the Packers. Oh, yes, it is. The Packers never did it. The Packers acted like they were trying to do it, and they always managed to dupe him into thinking that they were trying. They weren't really trying. They didn't try to sign Odell Beckham Jr. a couple years ago. They tried to make Aaron Rodgers think they tried to sign Odell Beckham Jr. Rodgers is going to expect the Jets not just to flirt, but to close the deal with whoever it is that lands on their radar screen as guys he thinks will help make the 2023 Jets better. Okay, you mentioned this idea, and we've talked about it previously. Breece Hall still recovering, still trying to get to 100%. Dalvin Cook being there, critical component for that gauntlet they have to run the first 6 weeks of the season. Here's Sala from yesterday talking about whether or not Cook's presence allows the Jets to just sit Breece Hall and let him continue to recover.
Presence doesn't change Breece's timeline. We're very comfortable with where Breece is at, very confident that he'll be ready for week one. He's been, I've said it, he looks awesome. He really does. And our plan for him has been very deliberate in making sure that we're protecting him from him and making sure that he's 150% ready to roll. And but as far as Breece goes and his preparation from week one, we're still anticipating that. And his timeline has not changed with the arrival of Dalvin.
Yeah, now, that's good, but still, that doesn't mean you throw him in and give him 25 carries right out of the gate.
No.
You've got balance now. You can go with both guys. You can ease Breece Hall in. He doesn't need to be the workhorse. He doesn't need to do what he was doing last year. I mean, they were a different team with Breece Hall. They were a playoff team with Breece Hall. When Breece Hall got injured, that took air out of the balloon that never came back, Chris.
No,
I mean, that's how good he was.
Yes. Yes, you're right. I mean, you explained it. Average yards per carry. And the big thing was the short passing game. I mean, how many times did we see him catch a little swing route and go up the sideline for another 30, 40 yards? He's got game-breaking speed potential. You know, like we talked about with Dalvin Cook when he was free and some of these other great running backs. It's just, hey, there's not that many guys to go around that go, hey, we're at our own 20-yard line, and if we can give this guy the ball, he can score from here. And this is Breece Hall has that type of talent. But, yeah, play it slow. You know, again, even the fact that he's doing those drills there, yeah, that's great, and that'll build confidence. But that still ain't the same thing as playing and, you know, having to react. Those movements right there are still controlled to a degree. He's not having to react all the way there. So get him in shape, get him in playing shape, get him confident and feeling good, and, you know, hopefully at some point, early season, midpoint of the season, he's back to 100% and can be kicking butt for the Jets.
681 yards from scrimmage and 5 touchdowns in 7 games. And, of course, in that 7th game is when he suffered the torn ACL. So between him and Cook, look, it's still going to be a tough road for the Jets. And they get thrown into the fire right away against the Buffalo Bills. But, boy, they got a team that looks pretty good on paper, and we know that the game isn't played on paper, but I'd rather have a team that looks good on paper than one that doesn't, and the Jets absolutely do. All right, when we return, given that we're talking about running backs and the Jets running backs, where do they rank among other running back cores in the NFL? That's today's draft. We'll do that next on this Wednesday edition of PFT Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Like I said, it's another great guy we add into the room. And like I said, it's gonna be a good competition. It's gonna be the best, bring the best out of everybody. So, you know, when he comes in, you know, all of our reps might get lessened or, you know, and we're gonna have to work him in. So it's gonna make us, you know, do the most of what we can with our reps. So it's gonna be fun.
Breece Hall off the PUP list and ready to go. One day after the news broke that Dalvin Cook is joining the Jets. Okay, so today's draft, the best running back core in the NFL. And we've got a special surprise today. The return, if only for one day, of the trivia question to determine who gets the first pick. That was a staple in the early days of the draft. We rarely have time for it. And when we do have time for it, we rarely have a producer who puts one together. Not that that's a slap at the other producers. See, I've learned from Aaron. I'm not saying anything bad at the other producers. But Pete, as much as it pains me to say it, I'm going to say something nice about Pete. He put a trivia question together. All right. Chris, this is for you.
Okay.
If you can answer it or if you can't. The Bears led the NFL in total rushing yards last season, thanks in large part to the presence of quarterback Justin Fields. Which team led the NFL in rushing yards by running backs only?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, because you start to look at the top rushing teams in football and you go, well, wait, the top four teams alone right there. The Bears, you know, the quarterback ran. Like you said, the Ravens, we know the quarterback ran. The Falcons had Mariota last year, the quarterback ran. Daniel Jones and the Giants, quarterback ran. Philadelphia Eagles, Hurts ran. Then you get to number six, and it's the Cleveland Browns. And I go, quarterback didn't run very much there. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Browns. I'm going to pick that one.
They were third.
Who was it? 49ers won? Were the 49ers?
Nope.
Falcons were still one, huh?
Falcons were number one.
Wow.
Cowboys were number two. And my first inclination before the answer was revealed was the Falcons because of Cordarrelle Patterson and Tyler Allgeier, who had 1,000 yards as a rookie. But then I started talking myself out of it. Then I thought maybe this is a trick question because Josh Jacobs led the league with 1,500-plus yards. Maybe that's enough in and of itself to carry the Raiders to the top, but they weren't even in the top three. So my first instinct, which I ignored, was correct. It was the Atlanta Falcons. So why don't I stay there with the Atlanta Falcons? Now that they had Bijan Robinson to the guys last year that led the league in rushing among running backs only, Tyler Allgeier and Cordarrelle Patterson, although I don't know how much we're going to see Patterson in the backfield this year with Bijan Robinson. I don't know who we're going to see where. Jonnu Smith, one of the new additions that we never talk about for the Falcons, used to play for the Titans before going to the Patriots, but Jonnu Smith is like, I don't have a position. I don't think any of them are going to have positions. I think they're going to move these guys around. And you know what that does? That allows Arthur Smith to drop it into overdrive and go 2 minute and just start moving those pieces around. And Bijan Robinson lines up as a running back. Then he's in the slot. Then he's split wide. Then Cordarrelle Patterson's here. And then Jonnu Smith's here. And Kyle Pitts is there. And every play it's different. But along the way, the best running back core for the NFL this year, I think, belongs to the Falcons.
Yeah, they're definitely up there. I don't disagree with you there. And they're one of the few teams in football that their offense is orchestrated around the running game. And, I mean, if Bijan Robinson is what we think he is, then, yeah, your pick is very good. There's no doubt about that. They were certainly one of the teams I thought about taking first. I think the one I'm going to take first, though, is the team we just got done talking about. I'm going to take the Jets. You know, I don't know. I mean, hey, what's better than having one guy that can take it to the house for 80 yards? Oh, that's right. Having two of them, Dalvin Cook, Breece Hall, you know, Israel Abakananda that we saw this weekend, the draft pick from Pitt, he's good. Michael Carter's good coming out of North Carolina. He's got great ability to make people miss in space. You brought up Zonovan Knight, a.k.a. Bam Knight. He's another guy, to your point, Mike, where I think they have
have a roster that's so plentiful at that position that we get to end a training camp here and somebody's got a desperate need of running back, one of those guys might get traded. But, yeah, I like your Falcons pick. I'm going to go with the Jets next.
I will this is quickly getting difficult. But, okay, if we want the best running back core, we have to at least consider the team that's got the best running back. And right now the best running back is Christian McCaffrey. Now Josh Jacobs would have an argument to make if he was actually with the Raiders. But McCaffrey is in camp. He's with the 49ers. So I'll go with the 49ers. You add Elijah Mitchell. And the reality that there's always going to be somebody else. Somebody we may not be thinking of. Somebody we may have never even heard of. The Kyle Shanahan will plug in from time to time. And that guy will, under the play schemed up by Shanahan, gained 5.6 yards per carry. So with McCaffrey, that makes it an easy one. And with Shanahan and the way he devises the run game, doesn't matter who else you have. You got McCaffrey, you got Elijah Mitchell, you got whoever else, you're going to have an effective core of running backs.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, it's got, you know, the top end big time talent, and then it's got some other guys behind it where you'd go, well, if the top end big end, you know, big time talent's hurt, they're not going to fall off the planet here in the running game with the guys that you mentioned behind them. I mean, Davis Price, Mason, like you said, Mitchell, they're damn good players. They really are. And then you add the fact in that they put Deebo Samuel back there, right? That's the curveball with some of these teams. And you go, well, damn, they'll do that with him too. That's scary. So they were definitely on my short list of teams there as well, Mike. I'm with you. Now this does get interesting. It really does. And this is where I'm going to go with one that's a little bit, I don't know, projection-based a little and maybe unproven, but one that I think I got great confidence in. One, you know, like you said, the balance. I'm going to go with the Seahawks. I look at Kenneth Walker, and I see Kenneth Walker, I see one of the best running backs in football. So, boom, that's one reason I like him. But then they get Zach Charbonnet from UCLA in the draft. Charbonnet is, you know, between the tackles thumper. I don't have any doubt that he's going to be good in that role and give them solid yards that way. DJ Dallas on the roster, not bad. Who else am I missing? Oh, Kenny McIntosh, who they got out of Georgia. You add him to it. And again, I know you're young and whatever, but, you know, like we always talk about, these guys are in their prime in the first, second, third years of their career. We got to take them now before they get too old. I'm going to go with the Seahawks, go off the board a little bit.
Well, you weren't really off the board because it was among the potential selections that Pete added.
Yeah, you're right.
I will
it was.
Say
you're
something
right.
else nice about Pete.
That's enough
when
for
Pete's
today.
Producing the show and we have a draft, this is it. This is enough for a year. When we have a draft, when Pete's producing the show, he will put a bunch of selections for us, making our preparation easier. But then the challenge for me is to come up with one that he didn't include. And yes, I'm allowing myself to be influenced by that in making this pick, but at least I admit it. I'm going to go Cowboys. They were second last year, and it's not like Ezekiel Elliott was adding a whole lot to the production. They still have Tony Pollard, and they wouldn't have franchise tagged him if they didn't think he was going to be healthy and ready to go week one. I'm throwing this in there. Even though he's buried currently at fourth on the depth chart behind Rico Dowdle and Malik Davis, and obviously with Pollard as the starter, I'm fascinated by Deuce Vaughn. And I saw some clips of him running around guys, and he's so little, and it's just fun to watch. And they may have something with this kid that is, I think, smaller than Darren Sproles. So much focus and so much obsession with the pass game this year. Great opening to take advantage of the running backs. As everyone's worried about what they're going to do with Brandon Cooks and CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup, maybe these running backs have something in store for defenses that they're not thinking about, Chris.
Yeah, I hear you there. You know, I'm interested to see how that plays out, too. I am. Deuce Vaughn, the way he looks, you know, as far as just to the eye, you go, wait, can this guy really make it happen? But, man, he can move and cut on a dime, so there's potential there. And, yeah, when Pollard's healthy, Pollard's awesome. I mean, he is definitely one of the better running backs, top five-ish conversation type running back in the game, you know. So I think you're going on a little limb right there right now, but I hear you. I want to see more before I would have drafted them, but we'll see where it goes, and maybe by the end of the training camp, you'll be able to stick your chest out and go, see, I was right, Sim, shut up.
Also, one more compliment for the control room. Great job pulling up the Cowboys Deuce Vaughn highlights, even though it wasn't one of the potential.
What is wrong with you today? I've never heard you. I mean, usually you're just telling the control room how horrible they are, and we need a new control room. Today, you've given them praise.
That's not me. I'm drunk. I'm kidding. I shouldn't joke about that.
No, you should.
I'll be drunk later.
Okay, good.
I was drunk.
You were drunk. Okay.
I have a hangover. You know what that means? It means you're drunk. No, it means I was drunk.
I think my last one here, and this is tough. I'm gonna go with the Saints. I'm gonna go with the Saints, and the fact that, hey, Alvin Kamara, I know it's, you know, maybe towards the down part of his career, but he's still really damn good. Jamal Williams, you add that, 1,000-yard rusher. And then I like this Kendre Miller from TCU, who I know we talked about it last week. He reminds me a lot of Alvin Kamara, but I think that's a damn good three right there. I'll take them as my third team.
And remember, Kamara's going to miss the first three games of the year because of that personal conduct policy suspension. Kendre Miller suffered a knee sprain in the preseason opener.
He's okay.
But reportedly not serious, and they think he'll be ready to go week one. And they'll need him. Week one. The Browns need Deshaun Watson week one through week 17. Joel Bitonio, some concerns about the Eagles being a little too aggressive in their chase of Deshaun Watson during joint practices on Tuesday. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
In our practice, you protect the quarterback. You don't want to come close to the quarterback. You don't want to take cheap shots. Things like that where there might have been a couple where, you know, questionable, you know, plays both ways too. We're going into this week trying to get better in practice and work. And, you know, sometimes there's some cheap shots and things like that where you want to defend yourself. And I don't know the exact situation, but there was a couple shots today where, you know, we're trying to make sure we're getting the best out of practice and not fighting. But it was just a little heated. Second day, it always gets a little bit more fired up, you know.
So, like, coach, the fans keep trying to calm things down, too, and huddle the Eagles.
Yeah, he's caught. We don't want to fight out here. We want to get better. And when two teams are competing, things are going to get fired up. So it happens.
Hey, Joel Bitonio, get back to me when someone is swinging the helmet and smashing someone over the helmet with it like Aaron Donald did against the Bengals last year. And I'm kidding, of course. These whole joint practices. Now, Bitonio's concern, as we saw in the first clip and heard, that they were getting a little too close to Deshaun Watson. The Eagles defenders getting a little too close, trying to knock the ball out of his hands. Josh Sweat, Eagles defensive end, trying to do that. It's no touch. And it doesn't matter if it's another team's quarterback. That's the fundamental rule of practice. The quarterback doesn't get touched. And, you know, Chris, I go back to, and I think about this every year, when you have joint practices, you better have a high level of trust between the coaches. And the coaches have an obligation to control their guys. And anytime something like this happens, there is a failure by one or both coaches to control their guys. And it needs to result in one or both coaches asking themselves, is this a coach that I want to be entrusting my roster to, the safety and welfare of my players? Do I trust him to control his guys so my guys don't get hurt during these joint practices? And I'm astounded that this happens every year because it tells you that people are making bad guesses on whether or not their players are going to be safe practicing against players from another team.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's not perfect. You know, things get chippy with your own team, too. That does happen. You know, it is a little like you're saying. You got to trust the other coach that he's going to control his players the right way. Sure, that plays into it. You know, and you know, they're trying to balance of, hey, we love the quality work, the newness of the new team and all that, you know, while our guys get to rest, while they watch the offense, our offense and the other team's defense go out there and our guys, you know, don't have to run the scout team defense, right? That's why the coaches love this. It's a new, fresh look, and it keeps the players kind of fresh during training camp. But this is the negative. And, yeah, it's going to happen every now and then. There's nothing you can do, especially, I think, when you just look at the optics of this situation. And what are the two basic optics here of this situation? The Browns, one of the better O-lines in all of football. They think they're damn good. they got two of what? The 6-7 highest paid guards in football on their team. And then they have a right tackle that's paid a ton of money. And they got a left tackle that was a top 12 pick in the draft. So they think they're the, you know, they're the bee's knees. But guess what? It's the Eagles coming into town. And they know they're the bee's knees. And they're bringing it. So tempers flare that way. So that's my basic thought of is. The one thing I will say, Mike, and this is where it, like, we got no video of this. Like, I'm just shocked that, like, it got that chippy and nobody had a camera or anything to show us this or anything. That's where it's a little crazy in my mind.
By the way, I hate to digress,
yeah,
but this show has existed in some form or fashion for 12 years now.
Yeah.
It's amazing how long it's been. Started as a noon show that streamed only, eventually became a radio show as well, first hour stream. Then it became a morning show with 1 hour on NBCSN. Now it's 2 hours of radio and sort of TV in the new TV environment of Peacock. And I say all that because in the past 12 years, I can guarantee you that not once was the phrase bee's knees ever used. And to have it used for the first time ever, and then again 5 seconds later, that's got to be some kind of record. I got to get in touch with the people at Guinness, because that is truly an amazing feat you've accomplished this morning.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks. You know, I mean, that's not the word that I wanted to come out of my mouth. I had, you know, some more Chris Sims colorful language that I really wanted to say. And I don't know why bee's knees came to my head there in substitution, but I think everybody at NBC will be happy that I use bee's knees instead of the other phrase I wanted to use.
That's like a 50s phrase, like, hey, man, he's the bee's knees.
I know,
knees, right?
And what does that even mean? Like, what does that mean? I mean, bees don't have knees, so it's just like a rare thing? Like, he's rare because bees don't have – I don't know. That's one of those that when I said it, I was like, I hope I'm saying it right. I've known it for a long time. You know, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
Here you are. Now we know. They've quickly searched it in the control room. A bee's knees is a Prohibition-era cocktail made with gin, fresh lemon juice, and honey.
So
the
now
name
we
comes
know.
Comes from the Prohibition-era slang meaning the best.
Damn.
So back in the 20s. So it's
good.
Even more than 50s.
Good.
They made a drink called the bee's knees because they came up with that. Still doesn't take us all the way down the rabbit hole as to where bee's knees came from.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know.
By the way,
I don't know either.
Tempers also flared at the Ravens and Commanders practice on yesterday. It's a common reality of joint practices, but I just think there's that extra obligation. And remember, when the Texans were on Hard Knocks, Sean Payton, then with the Saints, said, we're not doing joint practices with you because we don't need your guys, you know, with the extra little something for the NFL Films cameras. So there are some coaches that are very, very, very sensitive to what can happen when you get guys from different teams on the field together and they start, you know, riling themselves up a little bit.
All right, yeah. We need to break. All right, it's going to happen.
You see the Ravens there. Lamar Jackson had some things, easy for him to say, had some things to say about how things are different for the offense this year under Todd Monken. We'll discuss that next here on this Wednesday edition of PFT Live.
Actually, I was just on social media and I seen like a couple routes and I signed it to Coach T. And he was like, he gonna relay the message to Coach Monken. And Coach Monken liked the play, so he put it in practice. We didn't show it today, but I feel like it'll be good for us.
How does that make you feel? That? I mean, all of a sudden, you're getting fresh info in the office.
Made me feel good. You know, Coach listens to me. Yeah, made me feel good.
Lamar's he's a guy that thinks about football a lot. You know, it's on his mind. And I think he's always has ideas. He had a couple good ones, I can tell you that. So it was fun.
So Lamar Jackson, and he talked about this during the game broadcast, their preseason opener, the idea that Todd Monken, the new offensive coordinator, is receiving input from Lamar Jackson on plays that they could use, pass routes they could use. And when you listen to how he talks about it, and there was also some sound yesterday from Mark Andrews, it's pretty clear this was not the way things were under Greg Roman. So either Lamar Jackson has decided to suddenly start trying, or any efforts in the past were rebuffed and or ignored by Greg Roman. I think that's really the story here. The fact that they've had this pivot philosophically toward not seeking out or listening to input from Lamar Jackson, to embracing it. And boy, that could be a huge ingredient in taking that relationship to the next level, Chris.
Well, I'm with you there. I mean, yeah. I mean, first off, you got to earn your stripes as a quarterback for the coaches to listen to you and ideas and plays and all that, right? I think that Lamar Jackson's done enough now to where, yeah, they should listen. And at least, like, take into account what he's got to say or what he's thinking or what makes him feel comfortable. And then the other side of that, too, Mike, is just, like, that's what a good coach does. And I'm not saying, trying to say, I don't know exactly what Greg Roman did or anything like that. I'm just trying to say a really good offensive coordinator, it's not always like, hey, it's my way or the highway. They make the quarterback feel like they're a part of it, right? You hear me say that phrase sometimes, like, hey, the really good OCs I was with or quarterback coaches, I felt like they were in the fight with me, right? And they listened to the things I said. And even John Gruden, going back to that, you know, he would listen to me. Now, whether he would really listen to me and actually want to do some of the things I said, yeah, probably not. But he made me feel like he did. And that went a long way to go like, hey, oh, he's listening to me. He likes my ideas. Hey, we're on the same team here, right? And I think that's just an important communication aspect for the quarterback and offensive coordinator and quarterback coach to have, to not only to get the quarterback to trust you, but then that filters to everybody else, right? I mean, look at the Kansas City Chiefs. They weren't listening to Mahomes. He starts some MVP, 50 touchdowns. Hey, wait, you guys want to go around in a circle and then break the huddle? Sure, okay, we'll listen to it. You've earned your stripes. And hopefully that's where Lamar's getting.
Yeah, and that's what the great quarterbacks do. They have input in the design of the offense. They have input in the selection of the plays. They take ownership of the offense. And that's what they need here. Because when it's 3rd and 5 and you know Lamar Jackson can run for it, the challenge is going to be calling a play other than Lamar Jackson run the ball and Lamar Jackson trusting the play that's called other than screw it, I'm just going to run the ball.
Yeah, sure.
That's the key. So everyone's got to be all in with this new approach. If all of a sudden he's going to start throwing the ball a lot more and he's going to try to throw for 6,000 yards, he's got to trust this offense. And one way to do it is to get him involved in his construction. It just makes good sense. And Chris, I'll depart from the idea that he's got to earn his stripes. I think once you know he's your guy, then you need to treat him like he's your guy. You need to give him a seat at the table. You need to welcome his input. You need to not shut him out and give him the Aaron Rodgers cold shoulder. You just work here, right? I think that if you want to build your team around your quarterback, if you have a guy that you believe is good enough to do that, you got to unlock everything, and it's got to be a two-way street. Yeah. I'm glad the Ravens are doing it.
Yeah.
What's alarming to me is the first 5 years of his career, it never happened, apparently.
Yeah. I hear you. I hear you there. And you know, I don't know. I can't speak to that. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like he felt like his input was, you know, taken to serious account here. But, like, to go off of what you said, I hope he trusts it too. Because this is the first year we can look at the receiving core with the tight ends and go, they're real. Like, it's real. It's the best talent he's had around him. Now, we need Rashad Bateman to get healthy. But I'm pretty confident that Odell's going to look damn good. We know Mark Andrews is one of the best in football at that position. And I don't know, is it every day or every other day you get a Zay Flowers made this guy look silly in practice? I mean, from what I heard and saw there, he was dominating some of the Washington defenders in 1-on-1 and 7-on-7 again there. So he's got some weapons here to where hopefully, hey, you can trust them to make the plays. Like you said, it doesn't have to be 3rd and 5. If he's not wide open, I need to run and scramble and make it happen. He's been getting away from that and been better in the pocket. And now he's got an offense, I think, and people around him to where he can really capitalize in that department, and I hope he does.
T. Martin, the quarterback's coach of the Baltimore Ravens, and I believe one of the Brady Six, one of the quarterbacks drafted in 2000 before they got around to Tom Brady at pick number 199. Here he is on the communication between Lamar Jackson and his receivers.
But what we've seen and what I've seen is the communication. When they're in, when they're not in, you know, they miss one, they get right to it and talk about what happened. And that's improvement from the years I've been here and having coached the wide receivers. That speaks to the veteran leadership of Odell, Nelson, you know, Zay being young and kind of watching those guys. That's a good room to come into as a rookie wide receiver. And then Rashad, you know, all those guys, right? So I think Lamar is doing a better job of communicating and talking about what he thinks and how he sees things to them. And that's a step up from years past.
Ownership, maturity, and a conscious awareness that you can't play deep into your 30s with the playing style that we saw. Look at Cam Newton. Cam Newton should still be playing. Cam Newton is young enough to still be playing. But all that abuse physically that he took, running the ball, you get to a point where you just can't do it. You're just not regarded as a guy that is worthy of one of the roster spots. And I think Lamar Jackson, very smartly, doing what he needs to do to diversify his game and extend his career as deep into his 30s as possible and reaching that next level of overall achievement, awareness, maturity, attention to detail, the things that will make you a better quarterback. He's taking ownership of it. If I'm a Ravens fan, I'm very encouraged by this development.
I am too. And, you know, it takes some other people too. And I think that's the cool thing about what T. Martin was saying right there. Right? The fact that you get an Odell Beckham Jr. who's been around, seen some offenses, really into the nuance of route running and coverages. Nelson Aguilar, same type of thing. You know, that only ups, you know, Lamar's game. It ups the conversations they have all together, and it rubs off on the young guys, and that's what's great. Hey, I'm not gonna be shocked if Lamar can throw that damn ball. He can throw it as good as anybody. And he wants to stay in the pocket and throw the football. And I think he has the capability to make that Steve Young-ish type of turn in his career where, hey, he still can move and do that, but in the pocket he can dice you up all day long like we saw in the mid to late 90s from Steve Young. In the late 80s, early 90s, you got, oh, I don't know what I'm looking at. I need to just run around and make a play with my legs and do whatever. And that's what you got from Steve Young. And then he matured into this, oh, my gosh, West Coast wizardry, and just became an awesome pocket quarterback. I would not be shocked to see Lamar Jackson take that type of turn in his career.
By the way, the Brady Six did indeed consist of T. Martin, Mark Bulger, Chris Redman, Chad Pennington, Giovanni Accarmazi, and Spurgeon Wynn, which reminds me of one of my all-time favorite lines that I cannot complete from Stevie Janowski on Eastbound and Down. With a name like Spurgeon, I can't say the rest. We'll be back with more PFT Live right after this. There's Patrick Mahomes doing Patrick Mahomes things, rolling to his right, throwing across his body. No big deal. Looks a little like that preseason throw he made 6 years ago against the Titans, although that was straight down the field when he had a guy in his face blowing him up as he got rid of it. I've seen him screwing around with the behind-the-back pass. That's something he has vowed will be used in a game at the right moment, at the right time. That's to Sky Moore. You know, Chris, I mean, I've said this before. This is going to be an exciting season. There's so many things to be determined, so many things unsettled. At the end of the day, how do you not think the Chiefs are going to be right there in the thick of things, possibly winning back-to-back Super Bowls for the first time since anyone has done it in 20 years?
I'm you know me. I'm there. I'm with you. It's like I'm kind of one of those guys. It's like it's the Chiefs of the field, and I'm always a little bit like, I'll take the Chiefs. I don't know. I've picked them to go to the Super Bowl the last 4 years. I'm probably going to pick them again this year. I think they're one of those teams, to like your point too, where they want greatness, and then the fact that they've won two also takes the pressure off them as well, to where they can just let it fly. They need Chris Jones there. And can we show that throw again? I mean, you talk about insanity in the membranity. I don't give a crap if it's practice or back in the backyard with Timmy and Johnny. I mean, that's insane. He is 5 yards outside the numbers, which means he's like 4 to 5 yards from the sideline, and he threw the ball on the run, who's running a deep crossing route the other way, to the other numbers. I mean, that's insane. It really is. And that's where, you know, we were talking the other day. He's just breaking barriers down with what's expected at the position and how kids are growing and learning what they have to do at the position. Now, you need special talent to do that, but that's insanity in the membranity.
Kadarius Toney is expected to morph into their number one receiver, and obviously they've got Travis Kelce. Who do you think is going to step up from that depth chart this year?
Yeah, I mean, I expect Sky Moore to be the guy that works a lot of the underneath routes and does some of that, right? But it's like it's hard to pin who will lead their team in receiving. I mean, you said it right. Kadarius Toney is the guy. Can he stay healthy all year long? You know, we know Kelsey's going to be real, but out of the receivers, can he stay healthy all year long? I think after you get into that, I think you get to the top two guys on this graphic right here. Valdez-Scantling has an ability to run by people down the football field for deep passes, and Sky Moore, I think, can do a little bit of everything. So if you made me pick a pecking order, I'd go Kadarius Toney leads the team in receiving out of the wide receivers. Sky Moore is second, and then Valdez-Scantling has an incredible yards per catch type of average and is in third somewhere in there.
All right, we're going to take a break and wrap up this Wednesday edition of PFT Live right after this.
Was my assessment accurate? Was that one a little bit more, I guess, intense than usual?
I mean, I think all of our practice have their moments. I think this one may be the most constant, you know, and again, it's expected. It's deserved.
and it's continuing.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey! That's funny. Josh Allen, he gets the reaction he's looking for. All it takes is a hey, and the kids are under control. So, question. Who's the current starting quarterback from any team that you would not want to make mad?
Well, I mean, he's one of them. He's definitely in that top-tier class there just because he's so big and powerful and athletic that right away he and Anthony Richardson, I just think of them and go, well, yeah, I mean, and just from a physical manner, they're going to be tough. They can squat and bench and run, and they're flexible. So I think those are the first two that come to my mind.
Well, as a guy who's made a couple of starting quarterbacks mad over the years, like, I'm really not all that concerned about the topic generally, from Aaron Rodgers to Derek Carr and his popcorn muscles that we were discussing earlier in the week. The one guy that I really would not want to make mad for two reasons. One, Patrick Mahomes. One, I really like him, and I don't want him to be mad at me. Like, okay, if it's somebody you really like, you don't want them to be mad at you. Like, Patrick, what did I do to disappoint you? But second, and you just mentioned you're still watching the quarterback series on Netflix. When you wake up the wrong mother effer, as he said in that Raiders game.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's got a side, man, that if you flip the switch, and it's probably hard to find, but once you flip that switch, you have a very different human being than the guy that we're accustomed to seeing and hearing all the time.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, Andy Reid has said that the guy's a stone-cold killer, that he will rip your throat out. And they're definitely, you can't be that good without having that attitude.
Be careful if you see him on the road. Don't give him the
Rodgers,
finger.
Rodgers, get Florio now. Do it. Tomorrow.